Hello, and welcome to the PSA 2019 half year results analyst call. My name is Molly, and I'll be your coordinator for today's event. For the duration of the call, your lines will be on listen only. However, you will have the opportunity to ask questions. You can do this by pressing star one on your telephone keypad to register your question. If you require assistance at any time, please press star zero and you will be connected to an operator. I will now hand you over to your host, Philippe de Rovira, CFO of Groupe PSA, to begin today's conference. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Good morning again to all of you. In fact, I don't have special messages compared to what we said before, so I'm just available for your questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone keypad and ensure that your telephone line is unmuted locally. You'll then be advised when to ask your question. The first question comes from the line of George Zhang, calling from ODDO. Please go ahead.
Yes. Hello. Good morning, Philippe. It's George Zhang from ODDO BHF. Two questions, if I may. One set on China and another one on the financial services. On China, actually it's a broader question on the impairments, just to clarify a few things. If I understand it correctly, you've booked impairments in two different buckets in H1. At the operating level, 187 for the auto business, and at the equity level, 113 million at DPCA. I just wanted to reconcile those two numbers. Do they all address China differently? Are there any impairments in other international markets such as Russia or LATAM? This is really the first clarification I wanted to get. The second question is on financial services, just to understand, the overall performance is quite good, but I understand that the contribution from the Opel Finance was actually down in the first half. I was just wondering if it's just a one-off effect, and if the convergence towards the margin that the JVs with Santander provide is still on track and still valid. Thank you.
Okay. Well, good morning, George, and thanks for your two questions.
Okay.
On China, there are two buckets, you're right. The non-recurring expenses with 179 million euros, which corresponds basically to the R&D expenses in PSA. You remember that in China, their models of development is R&D expenses are made in the automotive division, and after that, the joint venture pays royalties to the automotive division. As the volumes of the project are much lower compared to what was supposed to be, we've got, as a result, to impair the R&D that we've spent previously. That is the 139 million euros that we've got in the non-recurring operating expenses. On the share net earnings of company equity, we've got 160 million euros, which are divided in two buckets. 50 million euros, which is the result of the 50% of our joint venture net result. After that, we've got within DPCA, impairments of assets for 130 million euros, which corresponds basically to impairment of CapEx plus impairment of deferred tax assets of DPCA. With these two lines, the 139 on one side and the 163 million euros, you've got the impact of China in the first half. I hope it's clear enough.
Yeah. Okay. I think it'd be -163, and we have the 139 at the operating level. Okay. All right. That's pretty clear. There was, I mean, that's for China, but was there any, because the overcapacity situation also applies to, you know, to LATAM and Russia to a certain extent, but there was no need for further impairments there.
LATAM, well, there is a very low impact of 13 million euros linked on the old BVH2 platform, and that's all. And I don't expect any more impairment in LATAM because the amount of what is activated in the balance sheet is very low.
All right. Okay.
So the issue is really China. Yeah.
Right. Okay. And on China, is it fair to assume that at the operating level, that CAPSA, the JV with Chang'an, is still loss making, but as you fully depreciated the value of the stake, you don't need to take the additional losses. But is it still loss making?
Yeah, but it's been loss making, but it was a one-digit loss in the first half.
Right. Okay.
There is nearly the activity is extremely low. You had a second question that was on Opel Bank. In last year, we had an impact of PPA in Opel Bank that was a positive one-off effect, and from an operational point of view, the Opel Bank is improving, and we will see that each semester. So it was a one-off last year that was positive in the Opel Bank P&L.
All right. Okay, that's pretty clear. All right, thank you very much.
And just maybe on the Opel Bank, there is a good improvement from an operational point of view, and still a lot to be done. The penetration rate has increased, as we said, but in B2C it remains 10 points below the Peugeot Citroën bank, and on the B2B there is a huge difference. So that's improving in both cases, it takes some time, but it's for 19, 20, and probably 21 to converge PC and OV banks.
Okay, all right. Thank you. Thank you very much.
The next question comes from the line of Thomas Besson, calling from Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Hello again. I have the question again. When should we expect you to disclose a plan on China and an updated strategy? I don't know exactly what you're going to do, but I thought you had mentioned the possibility of, let's say, more detailed information on the topic in February, or maybe I misunderstood. The first question.
Well, you've heard Thomas, you've heard the answer of Carlos. We're rebuilding the business model, but we are not planning a big event about China. It's our plan is go back to basics, rebuild the GV. Basically, that's what we're doing, and the first step what we need is to stabilize the volume, and that would be the first sign of a recovery, which we have not at all being able to demonstrate in the first half, but there is no big show to be planned on China.
Okay, I misunderstood then. Thank you. Second question: you have a massive pile of cash and a stake in Faurecia, which we know is not exactly identical to cash. Is there any consideration from Peugeot's management and board to eventually distribute Faurecia shares to Peugeot shareholders, maybe as a way to improve your valuation?
We've got many options with the Faurecia stake. That's a possibility. I've seen that option proposed by many people. There is no more thing decided on that side. What we have to recognize is Faurecia is doing well. One of the few companies that is that last year made no profit warning and even improved its guidance in the middle of the year. This year they confirmed their guidance and delivered good results. On the other hand, we know it's not a strategic but share for us. There are different options. One option would be to sell to improve to get some cash for us in case of that we would need that for an acquisition. Another possibility would be to distribute the shares. That's another possibility. For the moment, it's not the time of a decision for us. But these are options that are considered here.
Okay. It would also have the benefit to improve your net cash further optically.
We're aware of that, yeah, Thomas. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Raghav Gupta calling from Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Morning, Philippe, again. I just follow up on Thomas' question and I guess kind of Philippe's question earlier. You know, in terms of this net cash balance, we've talked a lot, there was a lot of discussion about potential deals. But can you say anything about how long you're going to wait for the right deal before kind of returning cash to shareholders, whether it be kind of via a buyback or something like that? Sorry to kind of push on the same point, but.
Well, frankly, I don't know how to answer that because, well, it doesn't depend only on us. But it's fair to say that we cannot stay like that for decades. But saying that, I don't help you a lot. I think the early 2020s in the auto industries are a period of huge changes, and I think it will be a trigger for many moves in the industry. So we will see who are the players that are able to manage well all the new constraints, and who are the players who are not able to manage them. So I think it will be very interesting to see what happens. And I think it will be the moment to consider if we use the balance sheet or if we give back things to shareholders. That is an option that is kept open, of course. But at the moment, we think it's 19. It's too early to make a decision about that because there will be moves in the industry. We're convinced about that.
So you're kind of waiting for opportunities, and it's fair to say that kind of 2020, 2021, an opportunity may arise, and that's when you'll use your balance sheet. That's kind of what I'm inferring from that. So we shouldn't necessarily expect a buyback in the next, you know, 12 months because the opportunities may not arise, the opportunities perhaps that you're waiting for may not arise. That's my interpretation of your response.
It's quite correct.
Okay. Okay, fair. Working capital, obviously you saw an improvement in both inventories and payables, but trade receivables increased in the first half. Is this simply timing or is there kind of something else to be said? Not sure if I don't think I missed anything on the call, but anything that you could say on the increase in trade receivables, please?
Well, there is nothing special about that. First, there is a seasonality on trade receivables. What you can see, the assignment of trade receivables that are due recognized has not changed. The only change in policy about assigning a receivable is that we try to eliminate all assignments of receivable that is too costly because it doesn't make sense. And after that, we are basically working a lot on inventories because we consider that working every day on inventories helps to improve the efficiency of operations because inventory means inefficiency somewhere. So, and especially in Opel Vauxhall, we still have a lot to do, even if we've reduced a lot if you compare June 19 to June 18. It's a good progress, but there is still more to be done there. After that, on the payable things, it's normal seasonality because we always have May and June production that is higher than November, December, because in December you've got 15 days when the plants are closed, and in May and June we are at full speed because we are preparing for the summer break. So on payable, I would say it's normal thing, receivable, nothing to say, and after that, it's basically continuing to work on inventories. And I would say both in PCD and on OV. Because we still find, on PC there are not much to be done more, but we still find new ideas. On OV there is still a lot to be done.
So working capital should continue to be positive on that basis in the second half if you've got this opportunity in inventories. Is that the right interpretation?
In the second half, on the payable, you've got the inverse effect of what I've told you. And and the inventories, we should continue to optimize.
Okay. My final question, if I can, just to follow up on the question I had on CO2 and regarding kind of your mix. So if diesel surprises to the upside and you kind of sell the number of EVs perhaps that at the threshold that you were targeting, is it, you know, it's possible, I think, that you'll fall below your 2020-2021 CO2 targets. Is there a possibility that you will then kind of sell credits, or do you not see that situation arising, i.e. you will limit the number of EVs that you're selling because they are dilutive to profitability?
Well, it's good news that now people ask us what we're going to do if we're below the CO2 targets, which means that now the strategy is being understood, and I'm happy to hear that confidence. I think the first thing to do in a positive situation, which really is what I hope, would be to use a minimal part of the super credit, because you know you can have flexibility in the utilization of super credit between 2020 and 2021, because we are people that are always careful. So I think it would be the first thing to do. Let's see at the end of the first quarter of 2020 where we stand, because we want to be compliant as soon as the first month of 2020, and at that time we will be able maybe to say more about the strategy of if we are in a very good position.
Okay, amazing. Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Jose Asumendi, calling from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Hey, thanks very much. A couple of follow-ups, please. I'm just trying to understand the benefit of wage improvement, wage cost improvement, specifically for OV in the first half. Am I rather assuming that the bulk of the wage reduction benefits will arrive in the second half, and we actually didn't see much in the first half?
Well, it's quite fair because in particular in OV, we've signed, frankly, I don't remember if it was May or June, agreements with the Works Council in Germany for the departure of 1,342 people in R&D and for 1,400 people in manufacturing. But we have the cost in the... below the ROI in the restructuring cost, but we don't have any positive effect in the H1. So that will start to give positive effect in H2, but also in 2020, because some people are going to leave gradually between 19 and 2020. So the first agreement was the R&D. You remember that initially we had said that we would transfer 2,000 people to Segula. Finally, 1,332 people have left the company have signed for a voluntary departure plan, and the remaining part would be a transfer to Segula in the second half of 2020. And after that, the other three agreements are about Rüsselsheim, Kaiserslautern, and Eisenach plant, and that will give effect in the coming quarters.
So if I can follow up on that, if I add up the positives you have for the second half plus the wage reduction that's coming in the second half, there is just no way on earth your margin is going to be down on OV in the second half versus the first half. It will be up. I get the previous comment on, you know, on the group and so on, and we can all make our assumptions on PCV, XOV. And I know you don't want to comment specifically on both, but there's just no way OV will deliver lower margins in the second half as the first half.
Well, the problem is always about the assumption that you take for for the market and what's happening on the pricing side. Because we know we are ready for the WLTP gate. The 1st September, there is a new gate this year in 1st September of 19. We know that we are preparing well to get rid of the bad actors in terms of CO2. What we don't know is how well prepared will be the competitors, and if there is an issue about pricing on the market. So that's an uncertainty. Investors and analysts do not like uncertainty, but I think it's a fact. After that, on H2, basically, we've got, well, what sustain the margin is a product mix, savings, because for the reason that you've mentioned for OV and continued synergies, that's fair to say that.
Leftovers of vehicles.
A doubt on pricing, not for what I've mentioned before. On LCV, it should help. On the other hand, you've got the normal business seasonality that is also a reality, as I've mentioned. In the last 17 years, you've got 12 years out of 17 in which H2 was lower than H1, and that's a fact, too. So I'm confident about what we are doing. After that, what are the market conditions? It's not that easy to say.
Got it. And just one final follow-up. Those light commercial vehicles are delivering higher margins than the group, right? That's still the case at Peugeot Group.
Well, I mean, the difference between LCVs and passenger cars is not significant. What is good with LCV for Opel Vauxhall is we've substituted the old combo by the new combo with a huge difference of margin, and we've grown by 17% the volumes of OV LCV in the first half, and that before the launch of the new Vivaro. What we can say, there is a big potential also, in terms of volumes and in terms of margins, because, okay, combo, now we start to have the impact volumes on margin. New Vivaro is to come, because the launch of the new Vivaro based on PSA platform is in Q3, and that's a big segment. And after that, there will remain the Movano. In terms of market share in PCD, the market share in LCV is much higher than the market share in passenger car. And for the moment in OV, it's the contrary. We've got a lower market share. There is around a 1 point difference. So that's a key lever in 19, but also 2020-2021 to improve for Opel Vauxhall. There is work to be done with the network in particular. That's not something that you do overnight, but it's progressive work. Well started, I was mentioning in the first half, plus 17% in volumes. It needs good way of working between Opel Bank and the network and the manufacturer, so that's improving, concrete actions that have been taken. It's something, it's a know-how that we're implementing, it's not very fast because you've got to work with each dealer in Europe to make it happen. But it happens, it's not a big change overnight.
Understood. Final one, please, very final one. Use of cash, balance sheet, et cetera, I mean, you've got a huge opportunity to enter the U.S. market. How far are you? It looks like the relationships, you know, trade relations are getting slightly more stable. How far are you off from entering the U.S. market?
Well, let's say that this will be it's not for the first years of the decade to enter the U.S. market. What we've done is decided to have U.S. compliant cars since the first design of the cars that we will use in the future, because that's a way to avoid a huge cost. So it's not something before 2024.
Thank you so much.
The next question comes from the line of Philippe Houchard, calling from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. I have a couple of questions. The first one is on the you've mentioned before these bad actors in CO2 that will be removed over time. But if I understand, the 5% or the fact that 2020 compliance is on 95% of the volume means that if those bad actors supposedly are profitable, you shouldn't remove them right away, is my first point. And the second part is, now, if I do my sums right, I think those bad actors or the worst 5% most polluting cars at OV represent probably twice as much in terms of CO2 non-compliance as most of your peers. And I'm just trying to understand how quickly are you removing those, and what's going to be the impact on your volume, maybe not in 2020, but in 2021, where you potentially have to remove part of your range from your dealerships?
Well, in terms of reduction of bad actors, I think it's a game in which everybody will do that. And I think given the efficiency of PSA platforms in terms of CO2, which is probably the best of all actors on ICE cars, we should have to reduce less. On the OV side, what is fair is on the GM platforms, we had issues, and that's the reason why we've announced that we stop Adam, Carl, and Cascada, which are really bad actors. And on top of that, they are bad actors and not very profitable cars, being on the A segment, plus Cascada, which is a convertible with a very low volume. So once you've got Opel Vauxhall on the PSA platform, there is no basically difference that should lead us to eliminate more bad actors in one brand more than another one. And what when we talk about bad actors, you may be thinking about family, but we also talk about mix, about version, in fact, because it depends on each engine, about each equipment. And all the car makers are now eliminating from their range their bad actors in each family. So the most visible part is, well, you stop one family, so Carl Adam Cascada. What you don't see a lot is the versions that every car maker is stopping or plan to stop. So at the end, if you just reason with one car maker, you say, well, he's going to lose volumes because he's eliminating bad actors. But in fact, everybody's doing that because you've got just no choice. So the question is, if you're more efficient in terms of CO2 with your platform than your competitors, you can gain of it. And in fact, reducing diversity, which I didn't, is not that bad. Yep. So we think we are positioned. Sorry, a bit long answer. I hope it's it helps.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. The second question I had is I mean, you've done very well in market share and profitability, et cetera. To the extent you can benchmark that, are your dealers, including the independent dealers, significantly more profitable than your competitors' dealers at this stage?
Are they more profitable than who? Sorry,
well, especially
dealers.
Yeah, I mean, compared to a Renault dealer or a Volkswagen dealers, are the Peugeot dealers or the PSA dealers in general more profitable than your peers?
No, I don't think so. And our goal is not to have our dealers more profitable than the benchmark. We want our dealers to be at the market level, but not higher or not lower.
Okay. Do they know that policy of yours?
Sorry?
Do they know that? Because they might want to ask for a bit more, you know, sharing
no,
the profitability.
They perfectly know that, and we're extremely clear with them. We tell them that, hey guys, the 2020 decade will be tough because of the regulation in European Union. So we're going to decrease your margins, and you have to decrease your fixed costs and make your homework. So it's extremely transparent, very clear message, and I think we need to be mature in the relations with the dealerships. If we just explain them that everything will be fine, rosy, and everything is a nice world, it's not true. And they are preparing to that. We've got a clear glide path in terms of reduction of fixed margins. So they perfectly know what's going to happen, and they are preparing to it. And I think it's a way to resist what is going to happen.
Okay, very clear.
Because at the end, we want to maintain our margins. So we need to push on everybody, on suppliers, on dealers, on the bank cost of financing, on the final customers. So the only one I don't want to push is on myself. I want my margin to remain the same level.
Okay. Thank you very much. Yeah.
As a final reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypads now. We have no further questions coming through, so I'll hand the call back over to you, Philippe, for any concluding remarks.
Okay. Well, no, thank you all of you for your questions. So I think the final remark would be management continues to be focused on execution. There is a lot of noise on the market, but as Carlos has mentioned, what pays us at the end of the year is results and quality of execution. So what we've got in our mind is a 95% or 99% execution, and as that we keep our ears open to something else, but that's not the basic plan, and you never know what happens, but I want you to be convinced that it is clear for us that it's all about the execution. Well, thanks to all of you, and I guess I will meet a certain number of you in the coming days, so see you later. Thanks.
Thank you for joining today's call. You may now disconnect your lines.